United States Steel, USS, the industrial family that serves the nation, presents the Theater Guild on the air. Our star, Ingrid Bergman. Our play, Noel Coward's Still Life. The play on which the motion picture Brief Encounter is based. Produced on the air tonight by the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers. Every day, everywhere, you are served by products of steel. In your home, in your business, in your travel. The trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. And now, from Broadway, direct from the stage of the Vanderbilt Theater, the United States Steel Corporation brings you Still Life by Noel Coward. And here is Roger Pryor speaking for the Theater Guild.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight, the Theater Guild is honored to present the distinguished actress of stage and motion pictures, Ingrid Bergman, in one of her infrequent radio appearances since her return to Broadway to star in her current success, Joan of Lorraine. Tonight, Miss Bergman plays Laura Jessen in a radio version of Noel Coward's Still Life, the tender, moving story on which is based the current Cinegil J. Arthur Rank picture, Brief Encounter. Those featured with Miss Bergman are the well-known star Peggy Wood as Mary, Sam Wanamaker and Romney Brent, both currently playing with Miss Bergman and Joan of Lorraine, appear tonight as Alec Harvey and Fred Jessen. And now we raise the curtain on Still Life, starring Ingrid Bergman. Comfortable home in Glen Cove, Long Island, 30 miles from New York. It's 10 o'clock in the evening. The two children were tucked in bed long ago, and now everything in the house is quiet and peaceful, except
Dad!
That...
Bobby, get back into bed up there.
I can't sleep.
How do you expect to sleep when you keep wandering out in the hall?
Dad!
What?
Is Mom home yet?
Not yet, Bobby.
Will she come up and stay tonight when she comes in?
Of course, I told you that before. Now, quiet before you wake
Dad!
Kathy up. Oh, heavens, now you wake your sister.
She wasn't asleep.
Bobby, will you get back into bed before I get angry and come upstairs and... Oh, Laura.
Mommy!
Hello, Fred.
Darling, thank heavens you're home. Listen to those two up there. They just won't settle down till you say
goodnight.
Well, I'll
go right up. Coming, children.
Well, Laura, what's the matter?
How do you mean?
You look so pale.
Oh,
and...
I'm all right, dear. I'm coming, children.
Mommy.
Quiet now and into bed with you both.
Did you bring me anything, Mom?
Oh.
What did you bring
Kathy,
me?
Still awake at this time of night.
Did you bring me an atomic pistol,
No,
Mom?
No atomic pistol.
Oh,
now,
gee.
Now in bed, both.
I'm in.
Oh, that's right. And cover up. So, were you both good today?
Yes, Mom.
Did you obey Miss Spaulding?
Sure. I think she's the best sitter we've had, Mom.
Oh, that's fine. Now, listen. Next week, if you're both good, perhaps you can go to town with me. We'll go to the circus.
The circus?
Yes,
oh,
and now, let's not hear another word. Good night, children.
Good night.
Good night.
Oh, that beautiful silence.
I think they'll be quiet.
I guess it takes a woman. I've been at them ever since Miss Spaulding left.
Did you pay her, Fred?
Oh, yes, and I told her next Thursday as usual.
Thanks.
Come and sit down now, By the fire?
A lovely fire.
What is the matter, darling?
Oh, Fred.
Now, tell me. Oh, I knew something was wrong the moment I saw you. Now, here, sit down. Shall I call a doctor?
No.
Here, put your feet up on the ottoman. There, now. What on earth is it?
It's nothing, Fred. I had a dizzy spell in town today at the Penn Station. I suddenly felt sick and I thought I was going to faint, but I'll be all right. I'm just tired.
Maybe you ought to see the doctor tomorrow for a checkup.
No, Fred. It's nothing. Now, please.
Just as you say. Now, take it easy now.
Yes.
Would you like some music on the phonograph?
Yes, Fred.
Well, there's a favorite of yours on here now. It's some concerto or other. I'll try that, How's that?
Fine.
Now you must rest, Laura. I'll just sit here and go on with these crossword puzzles I was working on. Are you comfortable?
Perfectly happy. Thanks, Fred. Perfectly happy. What made me say that? But I am happy. A happily married woman, and I must not forget that. Here I am, and upstairs are my children. And there, on the other side of the fire, my husband, Fred. This is my world, and it's enough. Or was. Until a few weeks ago. How can such things happen to a happily married woman? Oh, Fred, you're the only one in the world kind enough to understand what has happened. And you're the one person I can never tell it to, never. Even if I waited till we were both old, I could not tell you, because even then you might look back and feel hurt. Because, you see, Fred, I've been so foolish. I've fallen in love. It began in the most ordinary way. It was on a Thursday, so Miss Spaulding was here all day long to take care of the children so that I could have my full day in town. I went in alone that day and shopped at Macy's and saw a movie. Then, on my way back, crossing 34th Street, I suddenly got something in my eye. I had only 6 minutes before my train, so in the station I went to one of the lunch counters.
What can I do
for
you?
Oh, could you give me a glass of water? I have something in my eye and I want to bathe it.
Sure thing. That's nasty, isn't it? Here's your water.
Thanks.
Want me to have a look at it?
Oh, no, don't trouble, please. I'll just wash it gently with the water and maybe...
You know, I knew a man once who lost the sight of one eye through getting a piece of grit.
Oh, it'll come out in a moment.
Thing like that can cut right into your eye. It's mean.
Oh, it'll be all right.
May I help
no,
you?
No, really, it's just something in my eye.
Please let me look. I happen to be a doctor.
Oh, it's very kind of you.
Look, Doc, try pulling your eyelid way down.
Turn around to the light, please.
This way?
Yes, that's it.
Nasty thing, Tom.
Now look up. Now look down. Yeah, I can see it. Now keep still. I can get it with the tip of my handkerchief. There we are.
Oh.
Good work, Doc.
What a relief. It was agony.
Looks like a bit of grit, you see.
Oh, thanks.
Can I have some Coca-Cola, please?
Be right with you.
Thanks so much for taking it out.
Well, it was nothing.
Lucky for me you happened to be here.
Well, anyone could have done it.
Well, you did, and I'm very grateful. Oh, heavens, I have to catch a train for Glencoe.
Neither one for Bayshore.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
That's how it began, with a piece of dust in my eye. The whole thing meant nothing at all to me, at least I didn't think it did. But then, the next Thursday, I was in town again, and on my way home, I stopped at Cushman's in Penn Station to buy a coffee ring. Then, while going to my train, I ran into him, also with a package under his arm.
Hello.
Hello.
How's the eye?
Fine, it says.
That's good. I've just been buying a book for my wife.
I've just been buying a coffee ring for my husband.
What exciting lives we lead.
How don't we?
Well, I've got to catch my train.
Me too.
Bye.
Goodbye. Again, it meant nothing. Except that a few minutes later, our two trains pulled out of the city to Long Island about the same time on the adjoining tracks, so that we suddenly found ourselves traveling side by side, grinning at each other through the train windows, until his train moved away toward the South Shore and mine to the North Shore. And I wondered if I would ever see him again. The next Thursday, when I got to New York,
I had lunch in one of the station restaurants. It was very crowded, but I luckily got a table. Then I saw him come in. There was nowhere for him to sit, so I smiled and he came over.
Hello.
Would you like to join me?
I'd like to very much.
You'll have to wait in that line if you don't.
Well, it's very nice of you. In fact, it's a very pleasant surprise.
For me, too.
Your order, please.
Ah, well, what are you having?
Well, I've ordered oyster stew. Very fattening, I'm afraid.
Oh, nonsense. I'll have the same.
Oyster stew, half cream, half milk.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Now, should we introduce ourselves? I'm Alec Harvey.
I am Laura Jessen.
How do you do, Mrs. Jessen?
How do you do, Mr. Harvey?
Do you live in Pennsylvania Station?
No. No. Every Thursday out in Glen Cove, I have a sitter to look after my children, so that's my day off for shopping and the movies. I used to come in with a friend, and we had dinner together, but she lost her sitter, so for the last few weeks I've come in alone.
I see. Well, Thursday also happens to be my day in town.
Oh, you're a doctor, aren't you? I remember you said so.
That's right. I have a general practice out in Bayshore, but... once a week, I take over for a friend of mine at the medical center here, Stephen Lynn. Gives him a chance to get out of town, gives me a chance to study the hospital patients.
Is that a great advantage?
Well, of course.
Oh, I see.
Tell me about those children of yours.
Oh, do you dare to get me started on them?
How old are they?
The oldest, Bobby, age 9. Very high-strung and bright and wonderful.
And the other?
Kathy, age 5. Very pretty, with complete power over her father.
Mm-hmm. What does he do?
He works in the bank out in Glencoe.
I see.
And your wife? What's she like?
Small, dark, very intelligent, and sensitive.
You said that very proudly.
Well, why not?
Two oysters, too?
Looks good.
There you are, sir.
Thank you. It smells good.
Wonderful.
Well, plunge in. Tell me, are you going to the movies this afternoon?
I think so.
Oh, what a coincidence. So am I. Why don't we go together?
Oh, I thought you were going to the hospital.
Well, as a matter of fact, I killed off several patients last Thursday, so there's almost nothing for me to do.
How can you be so foolish?
Seriously, there is very little for me to do. I was there this morning and finished up everything. So I'm either going home or to the movies. Now, what do you say?
Do you think we should?
Well, why not? We're adults.
I suppose so.
Besides, I can sit downstairs and you can sit upstairs in a loge all by yourself.
Oh, a loge is too expensive.
All right, then. If you insist, we'll sit together.
Right then, I suppose I should have had a premonition, but I didn't. Then on our way back to Pennsylvania Station, we had a bite to eat at a little French restaurant just across from the station. All the time we were so full of gaiety and talk, there seemed endless things to talk about.
What were you like when you were a little girl?
Oh, that wasn't another world. It hardly seems to have happened to the same person. Can I pour you some more coffee?
Are you ever bad-tempered? No, thanks.
Of course. Sometimes I'm furious.
I don't seem able to imagine you being furious.
Why should you be able to?
Well, there are often signs around the eyes.
Do you feel guilty at all? I do.
Well, why should we feel guilty?
A sort of instinct.
How nice you are. Now, go on, eat up your pastry. It's very bad for you.
Now you're laughing at me.
A little, but I'm laughing at myself, too.
Why?
For feeling a little pang when you said that about feeling guilty.
Oh, there you are, you see.
But we haven't done anything wrong.
Of course we haven't.
The movies, a bite to eat. What could be more natural? Besides, we're both respectable people with children and responsibilities and work to do.
What time is it?
7:45. What's the matter?
The matter?
Yes, you suddenly went away.
I thought perhaps we were being rather silly.
Why?
Oh, we're such complete strangers.
It's one thing to close a window and another to slam it down on my finger.
Well, I'm sorry.
Please come back again.
All right.
How nice you are.
You said that before.
Oh, I thought you hadn't heard.
I heard all right. Is coffee really bad for a person?
If this is a professional question, my fee is $5.
It's almost time for your train. We ought to go soon.
I hate to think of it ending our supper.
I am sorry now.
What for?
For being disagreeable just now.
Oh, I don't think you could be disagreeable.
Tell me about your work.
Now, don't tell me you're encouraging me to talk shop.
No, you said something about the advantage of being able to examine the hospital patients here. What did you mean?
Oh, well, that has to do with my special pet field.
Oh. What is your special pet field?
Preventive medicine.
Oh, I see.
I'm afraid you don't.
No. Oh, I was trying to be intelligent.
Well, most good doctors, especially when they're young, have private dreams. Sometimes those dreams get strangled by endless training and routine and... Am I boring you?
No. No, I don't quite understand. But you're not boring me.
But what I mean is this. All doctors... What color are your eyes?
Brown and green.
Uh-huh.
Go on.
Yeah, well, doctors have to have a sense of vocation, a deep-rooted, unsentimental desire to do good.
Yes, I can see that.
Well, obviously, one way of preventing disease is worth 50 ways of curing it. That's where my specialty comes in.
I see.
There's a little cigarette ash on your chin. Do you mind if I wipe it away?
Thanks.
There we are. Now, preventive medicine really has to do with living conditions and working conditions. For instance, my specialty is pneumoconiosis.
Oh, dear.
Simpler than it sounds. I like the way your mouth curls up on the side.
Go on.
Well, pneumoconiosis is simply a slow process of fibrosis of the lung due to the inhalation of particles of dust.
Oh.
Now, New York is obviously a place where people work under all kinds of conditions, from the best to the very worst. So here's a chance to study the effects and maybe make some kind of contribution that amounts to something.
You suddenly look much younger.
Do I?
Yes. Almost like a little boy.
Well, why did you say that?
Oh, I don't know. Yes, I do.
Well, tell me.
No, I couldn't really. What time is it?
It's almost 8. We've got to go.
Yes.
I'll leave the money here for the waitress. Come on.
Yes.
We've only got a few minutes.
I know.
We'll have to hurry.
Oh, yes, you mustn't miss your train.
Come on, the light screen over there. We can cross the street.
I'm with you.
It's been so nice this afternoon.
I've enjoyed it very much.
I'm glad. Shall I see you again?
Here. Through this door, quick. You'll have to run for your train. Don't worry about me.
Shall I see you again?
Of course. Why not? Perhaps you could come out to Glen Cove one Sunday. It's far, I know, but we'll all be very happy to see you.
Please, please.
What is it?
Next Thursday at the same time.
No, I can't possibly.
Please, I ask you humbly.
I can't, no.
Please.
Don't ask me, I beg you.
All right. Bye.
I'll be there. Next Thursday.
Oh, thank you, dear, thank you.
Now run. Run. I saw him run for the train to Bayshore, and I went slowly to my train. As I went, I tried to imagine him going home to his wife. What would he say to her? Darling, I met the most charming woman today from Glen Cove. Or what would he say? Then I realized suddenly that he would say nothing. Absolutely nothing. And then, for the first time, the first awful feeling of danger swept over me. As I arrived home, there came a moment I shall never forget. As I opened the front door...
Laura.
Hello, Fred.
Laura, old girl, listen.
What's wrong, Fred? You look so...
Now, Laura, there's nothing to be alarmed
about. What's happened?
Stay calm, please. It's Bobby.
Bobby?
The doctor's been here and everything's all right.
Fred!
Now, wait. Bobby was sort of brushed by a car.
No,
he isn't hurt badly, but he was knocked down and he had a slight concussion. Will he be all over it in no time?
Bobby, oh, my boy, my poor boy. Bobby, how are you? Oh, Bobby, to think I wasn't here. How are you?
I'm all right now. I had an awful pain in my head for a while, but it's gone now.
Oh, thank heaven.
The doctor gave me some pills and a big lollipop. Pre-war size, he said.
Thank heaven you're all right. Thank heaven. I sat there, holding my boy. And in that moment, it seemed to me that what had happened was some awful warning. A punishment. And then you, Fred, came into the room and we said goodnight to our son, and you and I came downstairs, Fred, and sat before the fire. As we're sitting now, listening to music. And you worked on your crossword puzzle as you're doing now. And I sat here and resolved I would not see Alec Harvey again. I would not meet him the following Thursday. Oh, 100 times during the following week I swore I would not meet him. But, oh, how can I explain it? I did meet him, Fred. I did.
You are listening to Ingrid Bergman in Still Life, produced by the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel is George Hicks.
Good evening. Usually when I talk to you about United States Steel, I tell you about some of the many jobs done by this organization and about the men and women who work for it and own it. Tonight I'd like to tell you about where its money goes, how much is taken in, and how it is paid out. When we talk about the financial affairs of companies with nationwide activities, we naturally get into large figures, and that's often confusing. For instance, when I tell you that United States Steel received $1,496,000,000 for the products and services which it sold in 1946, the largest amount in any peacetime year, that sounds like a colossal sum of money, and it is. Still, this vast amount is only about equal to the book value of the assets of United States Steel. To put the matter in simple language, United States Steel required in 1946 almost a dollar of investment in its business in order to secure a dollar of sales. Now, what became of these large gross receipts in 1946? I'll use percentages because they're easier to follow. 47% of this gross revenue was paid out for the services of the men and women who work for United States Steel. They number around 275,000. 37.5% additional went for products and services bought from others, such as raw materials, supplies, and transportation costs. Depreciation, interest, and taxes accounted for a further 9.5%. After all of these costs of doing business were taken care of, only 6% of this revenue remained, out of which to pay dividends to the owners of the business, comprising 228,000 stockholders in all parts of the country, and also to set aside something for a future rainy day. When dollar figures of profit are mentioned, they may seem large at first glance, but their true size can be determined only by their relation to total sales and to total investment. United States Steel worked hard in 1946 to supply as much as possible of the steel and other products and services the nation needed so badly. In so doing, United States Steel earned a profit of only 5.5% on its investment. Or, to put it another way, 6 cents on each sales dollar. Now, this seems far from an excessive profit, considering that for most of 1946, its steel production was continuously in excess of 90% of capacity. United States Steel has always worked to the best of its ability to meet the needs of our country. It will continue to do its best to help America develop and prosper in what it hopes will be a lasting peace. It knows that United States Steel prospers only as America prospers. These are basic financial facts about the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
Pause now for station identification.
Your station is KECA Los Angeles.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of Still Life, starring Ingrid Bergman as Laura and featuring Peggy Wood as Mary, Sam Wanamaker as Alec, and Romney Brent as Fred.
Are you comfortable, dear?
Yes, Fred. Thanks.
I like this concerto.
Yes.
You know, this puzzle has me stumped. Who said a horse, my kingdom for a horse? Richard, wasn't it?
I think so.
Well, I wish he hadn't. It spoils everything. Hang it.
Husband, sitting there across from me working on your puzzle, didn't you feel during the past month that you were suddenly beginning to live with a stranger? No, you didn't. And it would hurt you if you learned now, and that's why I can never tell you. The following Thursday, I went to meet Alec Harvey, only to tell him we must not meet again. He agreed. And then after lunch, we went up to Times Square to a movie. A farewell movie, he said. It was The Conquering Flame.
I know you're trying to get a rat, you.
Do you?
Yes, I do. And when Martin Dexter arrives, we'll talk out of the other side of your crooked mouth.
What if I were to tell you that your young friend, Martin Dexter, will not arrive?
What do you mean?
Exactly.
This is awful.
What have
they
wrong,
think I'm
Dexter?
Such tripe.
You will never
terrible.
Know.
May we have any quiet
there?
All I can
there?
Tell you is you will not arrive.
I don't think they want us to talk.
Quiet!
But never mind. The unappetizing details.
You'll pay for this.
Well, I can't stand it.
Why not?
Oh, nor I.
Listen, it's a beautiful day. It's the first real day of spring. Let's get outdoors and take a walk.
All right, let's.
Come on, this way.
Why not?
Pardon us, please.
After all, a man near at hand is worth two lying dead by the roadside.
No, you killed him.
Did I?
We crept furtively out of the theater and walked north to Central Park. It was a bright, sunny day. And when we came to a boathouse, we at once decided to take a boat and go out on the water. So we went off along the lakeshore, I trailing my hand in the water and Alec rowing very badly.
What's happened?
Oh, we're grounded in the mud.
Oh, I didn't notice it was getting so shallow.
No, I didn't either.
Well, never mind. I'll give it a push with the oar.
Oh, Alec, do you have to stand up?
Uh-huh, more leverage.
Shall I help you push?
If you want to. Get up and take hold here.
Yes, all right.
Now then, push. Push.
Oh, we're moving.
Mm-hmm.
Alec, get the oar loose.
I can't. It's stuck in the mud.
Oh, look out. Let it go.
I don't dare. Help me pull it out and I'll pull.
No, look out, Alec. Oh, no, look at us soaked to the knees.
And there goes our boat drifting out to the lake.
What are we going to do, Alec?
Well, the management will have to retrieve the boat. We'd better step ashore, at least. Come on.
Oh, it is so gooey.
And then let's get over to that boathouse and get...
Oh, are you all right?
Don't get your feet wet, I always tell my patients.
Oh, that fire feels good.
Wonderful.
what must that boatman think of us?
He must have a special affection for crazy people. We give him the nuisance of going out after our boat, so he lights his stove for us first.
I feel so wonderful.
Then why do you have that worried look in your eyes again?
Oh, Alec.
What?
I suddenly thought how free and released I felt all after you... afternoon with you. And then I thought how How shameful that I should feel that way with someone who is not my husband. Someone I hardly know.
You know what's happened, don't you? We've fallen in love.
No,
it's
no.
True. Laura, tell me, it's just as true for you as it is for me. That you too feel something that
no,
somehow...
No, there is still time.
Time for what?
Time for us to be sensible and avoid something we can't let happen.
Laura, I know what you mean, and you're right. We both have too many responsibilities to let this go on. Neither of us would want to hurt those who are dear to us.
Then stop now. Now
I... No, wait. For just one moment. Let this be a moment for you and me alone. A moment that need never hurt anyone except ourselves.
Must we be hurt by it?
Perhaps. Laura, I love you. Tell me it's the same with you.
Alec, I'm worried. I'm afraid.
Laura.
I'm afraid.
Laura.
I love you, too. Yes. Yes, Alec, I love you. That was only 2 weeks ago. How well I remember coming home that day, with my head full of strange romantic dreams and going upstairs to get ready for dinner. Then as I sat my dresser, you, Fred, came into the bedroom.
Hello, darling.
Hello, Fred.
How's everything?
Fine.
Oh, you look beautiful, darling. Did you have a good time in town? What were you doing?
Oh, went to a movie.
Alone?
No, I met Mary Norton for lunch, and we went to see The Conquering Flame.
Sounds awful.
Oh, it was terrible. We left in the middle.
Well, hurry up with the beautifying, will you, darling? Huh? I want dinner.
Oh, I'll be right down.
All right, dear.
You didn't know it, Fred. But that was the first time in all our years together that I ever lied to you. And when I had started, one lie seemed to lead to another. Right after you left the room, I picked up the phone to call Mary Norton.
Hello?
Mary? Laura?
Laura, I haven't talked to you for a couple of months.
Oh, I've been awfully busy.
What have you been up to?
Oh, nothing much. Mary.
Yes?
Will you back me up in a very awful domestic lie?
Oh, bad as all that?
My life depends on it.
Oh, sounds exciting. Tell me.
Oh, it's just that I was shopping for a birthday surprise for Fred today, and I didn't want him to know about it, so I told him I had lunch and went to the movies with you. We saw The Conquering Flame and left in the middle.
Oh, is that all?
I knew you wouldn't fail me.
I'll ask as much of you someday. I have a new sitter, and she can give me Thursday. So from now on, I can go with you again.
Oh, good.
How about next Thursday?
I can't next Thursday, no.
Oh,
but,
well, some other time then.
Yes, I'll call you about it.
Oh, fine.
Goodbye, Mary.
Goodbye.
When next Thursday came, I met Alec in front of the Times building at 42nd Street, and he took me to an expensive midtown hotel for lunch. Alec was very excited and full of fun, and he insisted in ordering champagne, because he said, after all, we're only middle-aged once. Then after lunch, he said...
Now, you wait here in the lobby. I've got a surprise for you.
Surprise?
Yes, you'll see. I'll be back in a moment.
All right.
So long.
Oh. Laura!
Oh, hello, Mary.
Why, Laura, I thought it was you in there. But you know, I'm so short-sighted, I can never be sure.
In where?
In the dining room there. Oh. I saw you all right with that perfectly stunning he-man.
That was Alec Harvey. You remember him, don't you?
Alec Harvey? I don't remember the name.
Oh, he's an old friend of the family and a very fine doctor.
Oh. Well, I was having lunch in there with my husband's rich old aunt. She lives here at the hotel, and once in a while I believe in giving her some attention, if you know what I mean. So there I was, and I was sure it was you.
Laura,
although
everything's ready now, Laura.
Eric,
all
right. You remember Mary Norton, don't you?
I don't believe I...
It's no use, Laura. We've never laid eyes on each other. Well, I've got to be running along. Goodbye, Dr. Harvey.
Goodbye, Mrs. Norton. Awfully glad to have met you.
So long, Laura. And I certainly envy you your champagne.
So long, Mary.
Goodbye.
I'm terribly sorry.
It was awful, awful. She was in the dining room with her husband's aunt, watching us all the time. She's a neighbor of ours from Glencoe. Oh,
bad luck she was there.
What will they think?
Let them think whatever they want.
Oh, Alec.
I know, I know. But look, forget about it. Come outside. My surprise is all ready, and if we wait much longer, there'll be a ticket on it. Here, this way. Now then, there you are.
What do you mean? That car?
Right, it's Stephen Lynn's. He's gone out of town for a few days and loaned it to me. So hop in.
How wonderful.
I thought we'd take a drive.
I'd love that.
Let's go then.
We started off, and then for a couple of hours, Alec drove me along the parkways, not talking much. But then we returned to the city, and finally by the East River, we drove out onto an empty wharf and sat there in the car, at the end of the dock, looking out on the river. There, with the great city at our backs, we seemed to have left the world behind.
Pretty fine, isn't it?
Hmm. You can smell the ocean in that breeze.
Are you happy?
Not very.
I know what you're thinking. We're both too decent for anything like this. That our love, if we let it live, will be made ugly by all the lying and dodging we'll have to do. Isn't that what you're thinking?
Oh, Alec, what have we done?
But, darling, we can't break it off all at once.
No, not all at once.
This is something we can't measure by our ordinary lives.
Why should it be so important, Alec? Why must we let it be so important?
We can't help ourselves.
Perhaps we still can. If only we're strong enough.
Why is it strong to deny ourselves something so real? Mightn't it be weak and not strong to run away from such a tremendous thing?
Is it so real to you? So tremendous?
Don't you know that it is?
It's so difficult. I'm lost.
Oh, don't say that.
Loving you is hard for me. When I've left you and go home, I'm more lonely than I've ever been in my life.
Darling, listen. Everything's against us. All the circumstances of our lives. And those have to go on unchanged. But let's bind this love of ours in real strength and let that strength be that no one is touched by it except ourselves.
How do you mean?
All the awful furtiveness can be justified if only we're strong enough. Strong enough to keep it to ourselves, clean and untouched by anyone else's knowledge or even suspicions. Something of our own forever. To be remembered.
Oh, yes, Alec. But...
Laura, I'm going to miss my train tonight.
You mustn't.
I am. As I told you, Stephen Lynn has gone out of town for a while. He gave me a key to his apartment. It's in an old brownstone house on 38th Street. Here's the address.
I see. Alec?
Yes?
Would you take me back to Penn Station? Now?
As you wish, darling. The station?
Yes, please. Alec dropped me off at the station, and I found it was just a few minutes before the 6:35 train to Glencoe. I bought a magazine. I went to the train.
Show your tickets, please.
I could hardly move my legs.
Train for Oyster Bay, Jamaica, Mineola, Rosslyn.
I went in and took a seat.
Other points.
The car was already crowded. I began to look at my magazine. A young girl sat down next to me.
All aboard?
Suddenly I got up.
What?
Excuse me, please.
You want to get by?
Yes, I forgot something.
Oh, well, why don't you make up your mind?
Conductor, please.
You want to get off?
Yes, my must.
Well, go ahead, quick.
Oh, thank you. I got off, and the train started. I walked back out of the station, and a few minutes later, I rang the bell at Stephen Lynn's flat.
Laura.
Alec.
Come in.
I can only stay for a minute.
Of course. Let me take your coat. We'll just sit down. Take it easy.
I had to talk to you.
Come in the living room. I built a fire. It seemed a little chilly.
Oh.
How nice. A nice room.
It's one of the old-fashioned New York houses cut up into apartments. They've built in a kitchenette back there.
I had to come back and talk to you. I got in my train, and then I got out again. Must have seemed crazy.
Oh, my darling.
Oh, Alec. Whatever shall we do? I love you so.
Darling, kiss me.
Alec.
Oh, darling.
I couldn't leave, Alec. I couldn't.
I'm glad you came.
What's that?
It's a key in the front door.
Oh, I've got to go. I can't be seen here,
Alec. Quick, there's a back door through the kitchenette this way.
Hurry, hurry.
Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye.
Alec?
Yes?
That you are?
Yes, Steve. Well, you decided to come back.
Yes, I seem to have a little cold. Inflammation of the larynx somehow reduces enthusiasm for country air. I thought I'd go to bed.
Did you want to get anything to eat first?
Well, there's fruit in the icebox.
Well, I'm sorry about your cold, but glad you've come back.
Are you?
Am I what?
I rather thought I'd caused a sudden derangement of plans.
Why, no.
From the scuffling I heard at the back door, I'd gather that a lady patient is even now beating a hasty retreat downstairs.
Why, no, I can explain perfectly.
No reason to explain, really, Ike. I understand. Some lady patients are a trifle nervous and can perhaps be better treated away from the formal atmosphere of a doctor's office.
Now, really, Steve, I don't think...
I must say, Alec, I never suspected this farcical streak in your nature. I'm sure the hospital doesn't.
I think I'll go out for a bite to eat, Steve. Maybe I'd best be getting back to Bayshore.
As you wish.
I dimly heard the men's voices from the flat as I started down the stairs. Outside, it had just begun to rain. I didn't know where I was going or what I was doing, but I just kept on walking as fast as I could, all the time getting wetter and wetter. After a while, I felt calmer, so I went back to Penn Station. I had some time before my train, so I went to the lunch counter for some hot coffee.
What can I do for you?
Coffee. Black, please.
No sooner said than done. My, look at you. It sure must be raining out.
Yes.
Say, I remember you. Where's you?
Laura.
Alec, no, no.
I've got to talk to you.
Well, if it ain't the
Alec,
doc.
Alec, go, please.
May I have some root beer, please?
Okay, I'm coming.
I've waited here for 2 hours,
Don't
Laura.
Say anything. Please go away.
I can't
it's
like this.
Better believe me.
Laura, I can't.
I never felt so degraded.
Come over to the main waiting room. We can talk there. It's almost empty. I just looked in there.
All right. Just for a moment.
Laura, your coat is wet through.
I've been walking in the rain. I didn't know what I was doing. I felt so horrible.
It was awfully bad luck his coming back.
I suppose he laughed, didn't he? I suppose you talked to me together as men of the world.
Of course not. He doesn't know who you are. I was just some nameless person.
Why didn't you tell him the truth? That you and I were secretly and shamefully in love, using his apartment because we had nowhere else to go. Why didn't you tell him that we were cheap and low and without courage? Why didn't you...
Stop, Laura. Pull yourself together. Just sit down here on this bench. Believe me, I feel as awful as you do. But, Laura, you and I love each other. That's all that matters.
It isn't all that matters. Self-respect matters and decency. I can't go on any longer.
Could you really say goodbye and not see me anymore?
Yes. If you'd help me.
Then listen, Laura. I love you. All the shame that the world might force on us wouldn't touch that. Still, I know that our being together must end.
Yes, it must.
But not quite yet, darling. I know how you feel about this evening. I know about the strain of our different lives and the feeling of guilt. That's too much to pay for the few hours of happiness we might have. Laura.
Yes, Alec.
I'm going away.
How do you mean?
Now, I want you to promise me something.
What?
Promise me that however unhappy you are, that you'll meet me next Thursday as usual.
Not at the apartment.
No, not there. I'll have to be at the hospital till 5. Could you meet me up there?
Yes, I promise.
We'll talk then, and I'll explain.
But what do you mean about going away? How can you? You can't give up your practice.
I'll tell you next week when the plans are complete.
All right.
Laura, darling. Laura, can you ever forgive me?
forgive you for what?
For everything. For having met you in the first place. For taking a piece of grit out of your eye. For loving you. For bringing you so much misery.
I'll forgive you. If you'll forgive me.
Next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
Listening to Ingrid Bergman in Still Life, produced by the Theater Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here again, speaking for United States Steel, is George Hicks.
Not long ago, I discovered some very interesting facts about the 275,000 men and women who work for United States Steel. Fact one, their average age is a little over 41. Fact two, their average length of service with U.S. Steel is about 11 years. It seems to me those figures indicate two things. First, that making steel and products of steel requires maturity and experience. And second, that the men and women who go to work for U.S. Steel are very apt to like their jobs and stay in them. Now, those facts are just as true for the management of United States Steel. A study of the executives in the corporation reveals that 9 out of 10 men in key jobs have risen from the ranks, either as workers in the mills or as engineers or as office boys. Moreover, the records show that most executives of United States Steel have been connected with the corporation or the steel industry from the very first day they started their business careers. Yes, for workers and management alike, being employed by U.S. Steel is more than a job, it is a career. And maybe that helps to explain why United States Steel has maintained its position of leadership in America's great industry for so many years. It's certainly one of the very good reasons why it will pay you, the consumer, to look for the USS label on anything you buy made of steel. For that label means the steel is made by United States steel workers who are proud of what they produce.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
And now the curtain rises on the third act of Still Life, starring Ingrid Bergman and featuring Peggy Wood, Sam Wanamaker, and Romney Brent.
Laura. Laura.
Oh, what, Fred?
My, you were far away. What were you thinking about?
Nothing. Just listening to the concerto.
Emotional sort of music, isn't it? Say, do you know of any Roman god called Uxpa?
I don't think so.
Then there must be something wrong with Albuquerque. Oh, I'd better erase that whole corner.
Oh, that's too bad.
Can I get you anything?
No. I'm fine. I'm fine. How could I say that? When just 1 week ago, Alec and I agreed that it must end. And only today, I saw him for the last time. We met late this afternoon near the hospital and had supper at a small delicatessen nearby. Then we rode downtown on a Fifth Avenue bus. On the way, Alec told me what he was going to do.
I had a job offered to me a couple of weeks ago.
What sort of job?
First, I wasn't going to take it, Laura. I wasn't even thinking about it. Then I realized that it was the only way out. So I made the arrangements.
Where?
a long way. Bolivia.
Oh, Alec.
I have a friend down there. They're opening a new hospital, and he wants me there to work on pneumoconiosis. It's really a fine opportunity. So I'm taking the family. We're flying day after tomorrow.
So soon?
Mm-hmm. I just finished up at the hospital today.
I don't know what to say.
Would you have wanted me to do anything different?
No,
even now, I would do whatever you wanted me to do.
Oh, my dear.
Laura, don't. Please don't.
Oh, I'll be all right in just a moment.
I love you, I love you.
I know.
We knew we might get hurt.
I'm being so foolish.
Here's my handkerchief.
Thanks.
Look, there's Central Park where we had our boat ride.
Yes, there are so many places here. I'll never be able to see without thinking of you.
I know. I'll at least have different places to look at and new work to do.
Soon we'll be at the Penn Station.
I know. Would you like to go back to that lunch counter where we first met? Have a cup of coffee?
Yes, I'd like that.
Fine, we'll just have time. What'll it be, Laura?
A cup of coffee, please.
The same for me, please.
I had a...
And a glass of water, too, please.
Sure thing. Say, I remember you, too.
Oh.
Why, sure, you're the girl who... What's the matter, honey? You got something in your eye again?
No, I'm all right.
May I please have a glass of milk?
Be right with you, bud.
There is so little time.
I know.
I want to die. If only I could die.
No, I want to be remembered.
I know. I do, too.
We still have these few minutes.
Thank heaven.
A few minutes for just you and me.
Yes, Alec.
For us to look into each other's eyes. A few moments no one can take away from us.
No one.
Few moments in which to tell you that no matter what happens, I shall always...
Laura! Oh, what luck finding you here. Are you taking the next train to Glencoe?
Mary, yes.
Well, that's fine, and we can ride out together. I hate sitting in those trains alone. The ride is so dull.
Oh, yes. Dr. Harvey, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Yes, I remember this time. Are you taking the same train?
No, I'm not.
Alec goes to the South Shore.
I'm a general practitioner out in Bayshore.
He's leaving for Bolivia in a couple of days.
How exciting, for a long time.
Hmm? Oh, perhaps even for good. Hmm?
Oh, that reminds me. Laura, did you hear about Nettie going to Florida?
How nice.
For a divorce, my dear.
Oh.
Her husband has been carrying on with some red-headed model in town, and it seems that Nettie had a private detective on him all the time. So now she's handed the evidence to the lawyer and trotted off to Florida. Well, her husband has plenty of money, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Those were our last minutes together. Mary chattering without stopping. The three of us walked together to Alec's train. There was never a final moment, a last goodbye. We stood at the gate of his train, and then Alec just pressed my arm quickly and walked away. And so... even at the very last, the world was against us. I wanted to run after him and throw myself under his train, but instead I rode out here to Glencoe on the old suburban local while Mary chattered and I felt sick. And now, here I am sitting at my own fireplace and you, Fred, my husband, are sitting opposite to me, and you do your crossword puzzle as we listen to the concerto.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly is a wild piece of music, isn't it? Kind of feverish.
Yes, it is.
I watched your face while you were listening. You were miles away.
I suppose I was. It was a sort of dream.
Laura, is there anything I can do to help?
You always help, Fred.
It wasn't a very happy dream, was it? Whatever it was.
No. No.
Thanks for coming back, Laura. Thanks.
The curtain has fallen on the Theater Guild on the Air production of Still Life by Noel Coward, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation. Starring Ingrid Bergman as Laura, and featuring Peggy Wood as Mary, Sam Wanamaker as Alec, and Romney Brent as Fred. Other members of our cast included David Anderson, Jimsy Summers, Carl Frank, Betty Breckenridge, Bob Dryden, Cameron Prudhomme, Barbara Weeks, Peter Capel. And now, here is Roger Pryor with a word about next week's play.
Next week, ladies and gentlemen, the Theater Guild on the Air brings into your home a current Broadway success, Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest, with the entire Broadway cast and starring the celebrated actor-producer John Gielgud. The Importance of Being Earnest is now an outstanding success on Broadway, and next Sunday, the Theater Guild on the Air brings you the radio version of this charming comedy played by John Gielgud and his entire company.
Remember next week, The Importance of Being Earnest, starring John Gielgud Company. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. The Theater Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Lawrence Langner and Teresa Helburn, with Homer Fickett, director, Carol Irwin, production executive, and our Armina Marshall, executive director of the radio department. The concerto, written especially for tonight's production and dedicated to Ingrid Bergman, was composed and conducted by Harold Levy. And the play was adapted for radio by Eric Barno. Miss Bergman will soon be seen starring in the motion picture Arch of Triumph. Your announcer is Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at the same time.